Welcome to the Running in the Center of the Universe podcast. I'm Ashland Dave, and I'm recording live from my podcast studio in Ashland, Virginia. Thanks for coming along. And this is Ashland Dave, and this is the Running in the Center of the Universe podcast, episode 181. It's the week of August 18th, 2013. I'd like to thank you for coming along and downloading the show. If you're a new listener, welcome. I hope you will listen to the entire podcast as well as download future ones. And if you're a returning listener, thanks for coming back. Really do appreciate it. This podcast episode this week is going to be mainly about the Dahlgren Railroad Heritage Trail 50K Ultra Marathon that I completed back on August 3rd, 2013, up in King George County, Virginia, east. I think it's east of Fredericksburg. It was a great time. My 25th marathon, kind of a milestone. I think it was my third or fourth 50K. I can't really remember. And I really liked it. I think that if I didn't have to train through the summer for this thing, which I really didn't train that much at all, and I'll talk about that, I probably would do this race again. But instead, what I'm going to try to do is do their half marathon, which is in February. It looks like late February is when they hold it. Because that'd be a perfect time. It's not that far away. And I just thought the event was well done altogether, and I'll talk about some of that as I get into some details from the race. But a little bit about the Dahlgren Heritage Trail, just some information about it because it's pretty cool. It's actually a private trail. It's 15.7 miles long, and it follows the route of the old Dahlgren Branch Railroad line, which stretches across the community of King George County, Virginia. It's near Fredericksburg. The Heritage Trail itself preserves open space, serves as an active wildlife corridor, and it's open for non-motorized uses such as cycling, jogging, walking, and cross-country skiing. I really thought it was really cool, and as I was looking at some more stuff on the internet about it, turns out that it's actually a private trail that you can only use with the use of a permit, but you just have to apply, and I guess in other words, I don't think you can park your car and just go for a walk. I think you have to have a permit because it's actually private property. It was pretty cool. A little bit more about the trail is they have a group called the Friends of the Dahlgren Railroad Heritage Trail. That's an organization of people who support the trail and want to see it protected for future generations. It's a volunteer group. They work toward the completion of the proposed, I guess they want to get it farther. And then they want to make it to get more support for it and then make it a public access rail trail. So they're lobbying the King George Board of Supervisors for continued support of the project. And I just thought it was just really cool to go up there and be on this thing. It was really neat. And as I get into the podcast, I'll talk more about the race and the course. Even though it was an out and back, we turned around at the 15 and a half mile mark. Never really got tired of the trail because it was, you know, you're out in the woods and in nature, and there were some different environments that you went through, and I thought it was pretty cool. I really did enjoy it. They do have some other events at the trail. They have, of course, the half marathon, which is in late February. Then they do the 50K, which is, it looks like, the first Saturday in August. They also do Adopt a Highway. What else do they do here? They've got New Year's Eve on the trail. Looks like that's sitting around the fire enjoying stories and friends, and they have shrimp and campfire lasagna and homemade caramels. So it looks like there's, you know, and there's hikes on the trail. So there's a lot more than going on at this thing than just these two races, which, of course, the races are pretty cool, the 50K. So let's talk a little bit about that. Had to get up really early to get up there because it was a 6:30 start, and we're a little over an hour away. So I got picked up about 4:45 in the morning by my two friends, John and John. John King being the one that was going to run the race, and then John Snuggs, who we also call Snuggy Bear. If you've listened to the show, you've heard me talk about him. He was going to be our driver and just kind of a support person. And the timing of the race really worked out perfect for me because we had house guests that were visiting for a couple weeks, my wife's family from Italy. And it was just kind of a good chance for me to get out and do something else for that day because they were focusing a lot on my wife and her brother who was visiting, and his wife and daughter. They were focusing a lot on visiting with my mother-in-law, who is in poor health. So this was kind of a good chance for them to do that, where I wouldn't be in the way or anything like that. And I was definitely gone, you know, all day because we got had to get up so early. Probably the coolest thing about getting up to this race was the T-shirt pickup and the race number pickup, packet pickup, was in a red caboose, a railroad caboose. I have to say that's probably the first time I've ever had that happen. I thought that was really cool. It was right there. Clearly, you know, the caboose was still on the railroad. There was still some rail line that was on the trail. And that was pretty cool. So we got the shirts out of that. The shirt's very cool. Then they had a pre-race briefing, just to, which was mandatory, just to talk about the race. And it was during this time that I looked over at the line for the Port-a-Johns. And, you know, the race was starting in just a few minutes. And, you know, there were people in line for the Port-a-John that weren't running the race. And I kind of thought that was a little cheesy. You know, you should really just let the runners use the bathroom and then you can use the bathroom. Excuse me, I'm yawning. I must bore myself. You know, let the runners use the Port-a-John and you can use it after they go. I've always said that the lines for the Port-a-John are very short after the race starts. So the people who aren't running the race, that's just maybe a little tip, and I'll have to make sure I don't break my own rules, is that you definitely, if you're not running the race, you don't need to be standing in line for the Port-a-John unless there's no line at all, is the way I look at it. The race was 84 starters, 83 people finished, and according to the website, the race has a cap of 200 people because of parking. I don't know where they would put all those other cars because it was pretty tight the way it was, but they had excellent support staff there getting everybody parked. No problems at all. You park right there close to the start. It was really good. So it was still kind of dark out and people had headlamps on. And I didn't really think that was necessary because the sun was going to be up within minutes. And matter of fact, by the time the race started, you could see already, so I don't really know why people had headlamps on. It wasn't that dark, and some of the people kept their head. It looks like they kept them on after the race started. I was able to watch a video online, which I'll link. It was a YouTube video that had people on a pump car, which is one of those. If you've ever seen, I guess the movie Blazing Saddles, it's one of those rail cars that you can pump up and down with another person, and it'll make it go. They had one of those out there on some of the rail, taking a video. And if you watch, I'll link to that video if I think about it, at ashlanddave.podbean.com. And I'm in that video at the two minutes 31 seconds mark. They had video of everybody running down who started the race, and then they had some selected video. There was another video that I guess I won't link to it because I can't remember where I found it, but it just had selected people finishing, which was pretty cool. So looks like 83 finishers. My finishing time was 7 hours, 5 minutes, and 37 seconds, which was good for, I think, 72nd or 75th place out of 83. So I clearly was at the back of the pack. And that was just fine with me because I had a great time. First of all, I was glad that I finished because I almost decided I was almost going to quit at the halfway mark just because that I was afraid if I went any further, I might risk injury. But I was able to finish. And the reason that's kind of remarkable for me, at least from my perspective, is because I only had my longest training run was a 10-mile training run. I did lots of 5 and 6 milers. There were some days where I was running several days a week, but I just didn't have the time, and it was so humid. My body just couldn't really go past 10 miles. And I was just, I guess, just come race day, I was just going to kind of hold on for dear life. Really what my plan was to go up there and start the race. And I felt kind of good once I got up there that me signing up wasn't taking somebody else's spot because the race was not at capacity. And I was going to step off the course at the 15.5 mile mark because my friend John Snuggs was going to be there, and I could have gotten a ride back to the start, and then we would have just had some refreshment at the end, and we would have just waited for John King to come. And because I didn't want to risk injury, Dr. Smitty had given me some real good advice, saying, "Hey, man, if you're not ready, you're not ready. You can injure yourself by doing it." Well, I knew that I could always walk a lot if I wanted to. I did a kind of a 5 and 5 interval, which was very effective for me. I was actually very surprised how effective it was. The 5 minutes goes by pretty fast that you're running. In the 5 minutes walking, you can really get down the course. It's not a lollygagging type of thing, and that worked really well. At the turnaround mark, I was feeling so good, I decided that I was going to keep going, and that I would just try to make it up to 20, and then step off the course there, because John Snuggs again was kind of meeting me along the course. As was a new listener to the show, Steve Buoni, who was one of the folks that I interviewed a couple shows back. He had emailed me indicating that he was going to be up there. And when I got on the course and first saw him, I'd kind of forgotten that. And I was a little embarrassing because he asked me, said, "Did you get my email saying I was going to be up here?" And then that's when it kind of dawned on me again. I've fallen into this trap of getting behind on emails that get sent to my Gmail account and not being able to keep up with them, especially because that's really seems like that's the main way people are getting information to each other these days, is through email. And I really need to pay more attention to that. So I decided, and I kept saying that the turnaround was at Walmart. And so I was thinking, well, we must run off the course, and then to make up for to get the mileage, we must have to run through around a Walmart parking lot. And I had this image in my head of what I had to do years ago when I ran the Baltimore and Annapolis Trail Marathon, which is a rails-to-trails thing up in the Severna Park area of Maryland. It's an awesome marathon, but we had to run the perimeter of this parking lot in a shopping center. And so that I was kind of envisioning that, but as it turns out, turning around at Walmart, and quote, turning around at Walmart, unquote, meant that you're turning around on the trail, which is accessible by going to Walmart, then you drive back behind it, and then you access the trail, the other end of the trail that way. And I don't even know what Walmart it is. I'm guessing the one in King George on 301, if I'm not mistaken. I think there might be one up on 301. Neil, if you listen, and you might correct me on that. I don't even know where that Walmart is, that because I think that the rail course went started and went from east west to east, and then turn around and came west to finish, if I'm not mistaken. So I felt okay at the 15.5-mile mark. I don't know what my time was at that point because my Garmin literally just stopped working. It didn't turn off. It didn't run out of battery. It didn't lose satellite. It just stopped, meaning I couldn't start it again, and I couldn't reset it. I couldn't even turn it off. It was very strange. And I also had trouble with my iPod, whereas, and you'll get a kick out of this if your children have ever been in a musical, I had loaded up my iPod with a lot of different stuff, songs and different things, because I started the race off with John King. We ran together for probably a half hour, then I had to go to the bathroom, and so we got split up at that point, and which was good anyway, because I planned to do the event mostly by myself and then meet some people along the way. That's just kind of how I like to get through these things. Well, my iPod also was starting to malfunction, and I've had it malfunction, but I have one of the little shuffle things, and it was clipped to the back of my cap. And I've had trouble with the iPod in the rain before, where it kind of stops. What it'll do, you'll lose control of it. In other words, you won't be able to fast forward the song. You can't pause it. The only thing you can do is turn it off. And I've heard that it's because the moisture gets in there and kind of makes it malfunction. And then once it dries out, it works fine. Well, my iPod, not only did my Garmin malfunction or just stop, my iPod got stuck on songs from Fiddler on the Roof, because my dog somehow those songs got loaded on my iPod one time when it was hooked up to the MacBook, and I know my daughter didn't put those songs on there on purpose, but I think it kind of synced up somehow, and so it got stuck on those songs from the musical that we had gotten on a CD, I think, from when she was in the show. She played one of the sisters because she had to learn the song. So what the director does, she'll give the kids CDs with all the songs so they can be listening to them and singing along even when they're not at rehearsal, just so they can learn the words real quick. So I had to go through all these songs from Fiddler on the Roof because I had no if I wanted to listen to something. So I just did. I couldn't even turn the volume down. I actually had to pull one of the earbuds halfway out. And so I got to listen to all the Fiddler on the Roof songs. At the 15 and a half turnaround, 15 and a half mile mark turnaround, once I realized that my Garmin was not working, I just threw it back in my gear bag and because I'd had a drop bag there and just pulled out my regular wristwatch. That way I would know when the finish would be, which was 2:30. It was the course had a 8-hour cutoff, and which was my goal, was just to finish the race in the prescribed time and not piss anybody off. And really what place I came in mattered very little to me. I just wanted to be out there on the trail and get another ultra marathon finish under my belt so I can, because the shirt was so cool, I wanted to be able to wear the shirt without having to put DNF on and Black Magic marker near the logo, which isn't that one of the rules? If you don't finish a race, you can't wear the shirt. I'm not sure. So here I am, I guess, turning around at the 15 and a half mile mark, talking to John, taking in some boost. The course had excellent support, peanut butter and jelly sandwiches, everything, Coke, Mountain Dew. I can't think of anything they didn't have. They had candy, chips, plenty of water. And, of course, you saw the same people on the outbound, and then you saw back inbound, so it was kind of cool. Well, I figured, hey, I feel pretty good at the 15-and-a-half-mile mark. Let me go ahead and try to get to 20, which would be amazing. Well, anyway, somewhere along the way there, I was told that, there was really nowhere to get off the course because it was possible that my crew was not going to be able to meet me. And as it turned out, I think I saw John one more time, and at that point, it was past 20. I think it was around 22 or maybe even around 24 miles. And at that point, I just said, I can finish this thing. I'm not feeling bad. I was chafing really, really bad, and I'm going to talk about that here. I think I got that on my list here to talk about as I get to the bottom of my list of stuff to talk about for the race. Nip guard, one worked, one came off. Terrible. The humidity was pretty bad. It was very, very humid. And I just kept putting fluids in my body to make sure I was taking S caps, just to make sure that I wasn't going to get dehydrated. Because even when I was during my walk intervals, sweating profusely, just a lot. But it was a good sign that I kept having to go to the bathroom every few, maybe about once an hour I had to go. And I guess that's of course a good sign when you continue to go to the bathroom if you think you're not getting enough fluids. So at that point, I just decided to finish, and I hooked up with two other runners, and I want to get their names right. So I got to check one of the girls' names, and her name is Atsidi. She's a Ethiopian, but actually, in hindsight, I'm not going to mention the other lady's name, and the reason for that is because I'm actually going to be critical of something that she did, which I thought was kind of showed no class. But what happens if you're listening to this podcast and you've never run an ultra marathon before? One thing that tends to happen with the people in the back of the pack or middle of the pack, back of the pack, which is where I'm most familiar and comfortable, is you tend to help out other runners, and you're kind of expected to. And even the people that organize this race encourage that in some of the pre-race literature, if I recall correctly. And that's part of the sport, because you're going past the marathon distance. Even in marathons, this is known to happen, but more so in ultra marathons, because you kind of have a duty out there to help your other runner, and you're all in this weird sport for some reason. It's not a 5K, it's not a 10K. You're out here, especially if you're like me, when you're doing a 50K or a 50 miler or even something in between. You're out there for 6 hours plus, and that is that's not something you just go knock out and then go home and then run errands, go to the grocery store, hit the post office, cut the grass, trim the, do laundry. This is your whole day, is what, for people where I'm at, in the way I look at this race. And so when this is your whole day, and obviously it's something that's very important to you because you're taking all day to do it, and it's a unique sport in the sense that not a whole lot of people do it in the whole grand scheme of things. So when you encounter somebody out on the trail who's doing the same thing that you're doing, who's generally running the same kind of finishing time that you're doing, you talk to them and you ask them their name and you get to know them a little bit, and they vice versa, they should do the same to you. And there are always exceptions to that, but I'm one of the people out there that will stop and talk with somebody. Well, what happened was I was by myself for many, many hours. Didn't see any other runners except for the guys in the lead that were passing me, and I'll talk about that, I think, in a little bit. I think I also got that on my list, too. You know, how the leaders don't talk to anybody and take the trail. So on the way in, lady catches up to me, and her name is Atsede, A-T-S-E-D-E, very nice. She says that she's from Ethiopia by way of New York City, and she was visiting family in Washington, D.C., and then decided to run this 50K. And I thought that was really interesting. She was really, really nice. She caught up to me and carried me for a while, and then we talked, and then she passed me, and she got maybe 20 yards ahead of me, and then what I decided is that I was going to run when she ran, and I was going to walk when she walked. And she was kind of keeping an interesting intervals. I think she was running about a half mile, walking maybe about a quarter mile, running a half mile. And the reason I knew that is because the trail had half mile pylons. Every half mile there was a post in the ground, so you clearly knew exactly where you were. And I think that was probably my favorite part of the trail, was the fact that you knew exactly how far out you were. Because keep in mind, on the way on the inbound, I had just a wristwatch. I did not have my Garmin anymore, so I didn't even know really what my mileage was until I got to these pylons. So I would, without trying to make it look like I was stalking or anything, I would run when she would run, same pace. I would walk when she walked. Well, eventually I caught up to her again, and we stayed together for the end of the race, and I guess that was probably for the last couple hours that we were we just stayed together and ran and walked. And we eventually, and she was very nice, and she said that she was probably the slowest Ethiopian out there. And I think the reason she was struggling is because it was her third ultra marathon in 3 weeks. So she had done, I think, another 50K the 2 weeks prior, and then she did a timed 6-hour race in Philadelphia, and I meant to look it up to find out which one that was. She said it was a timed race. I didn't get a whole lot of other information about that. But that's just what we talked about, was running and kind of ultra marathon. And then sometimes, you know, when you catch up to the people or they catch up to you, there's not really anything to say at all. Now, you know, sometimes there's these awkward moments where you get some vibes from the other person that they kind of want to be by themselves. Well, that didn't happen in this case. I could tell that she probably needed my companionship as much as I needed hers, just to get us to the end of the course. And the cool thing about it was we were running about the same pace when we were running. Well, we eventually caught up to another lady whose name I'm not going to mention. And we were with this person for well over an hour. Same deal. Was just getting to that slow part of the race and ready, just wanting to get it over with. And so the three of us were running and walking together and talking and just chit-chatting a little bit. And a couple times that CD dropped back. I think maybe because what she wanted was to, maybe she just wanted to be alone or wasn't feeling that good, or maybe she had to go to the bathroom. I don't know. So there was some loose, this three-person association was kind of loose, but everybody was all within, you know, say 10 yards of each other. So it wasn't as if we were all running tight-knit, and it wasn't as if everybody was starting to spread out where, you know, because we were still having conversations. Well, would you believe in other words, Atsede pretty much carried my ass, okay? And so there was no way that I was going to, you know, run ahead and dust her, because it didn't really make sense, because she kind of helped me get to the finish. Well, we carried this other person whose name I'm not going to mention. When we get about 100 yards or 150 yards from the finish line, because you could see it, this person just took off running. And she was gone. I mean, it was just, to me, now I might be wrong, okay? And what I'm thinking, and if you want to email me at ashlanddave@gmail.com and give me your opinion on this, I would actually be very interested, because I would like to share it with listeners in the next show. I kind of think that that was kind of cheesy, you know, no class, no class at all. And I inquired a little bit later to a friend of mine who ran the same race, and I got some information about this person, and apparently is new to ultras, which explains that. I just kind of thought that since we caught up to her, and really were the two people that kind of carried her in other words, you know, encouraged her, talked to her, said, hey, come on, let's run a half mile, and then we'll take a walk break, and then she would. And so, in other words, what should have happened is the three of us should have just run in with the same finishing time, because we weren't going to win. You know, we'd already lost. The winners had already showered and gone home and got their Twinkies, which I'll talk about. So there was really no point at that point to go sprint to the finish line, because, you know, you've just been walking for the last 2 hours. So I just thought that was kind of not showing any class. And, of course, I could be wrong in that. It might be a situation where, hey, it's still a race, and she wanted to come in a certain place or whatever. But I was, you know, obviously we were in different genders. And then at CD and this lady were not in the same age group either. So I don't really know where it really mattered. I mean, the finishing medals had already been given out. So I don't know. I'd be interested in hearing from anybody who listens to the show what they thought about that. If you think that, I guess the main question is, in an ultra marathon, if someone runs up and kind of carries you to the end of the race with encouragement and all that, what is your duty when you get to the end? Do you smoke them on the trail, or do you just run in together and give them the courtesy of stepping ahead of you on the, if it's a single person, you know, if only one person can cross the finish line at a time or whatever? So that's the question. All right, well, that was that's what I was going to talk about. I want to talk a little bit about the race leaders and how this worked, because it ticked me off again. I've had this happen before, and maybe it's just an insecurity that I have. I don't know. So I'll just kind of talk this out and see what I come up with. You know, with out and back courses, the people who are going to win the race are going to pass you at some point, which is kind of cool. Most races that I run, that I mean, with out and back courses, when you don't have an out and back course, you don't ever see who are going to win. And so the cool thing with out and back courses is that you see who's ahead of you, and if you're fortunate enough where the out and back is not so much where there's a bunch of out and backs, you clearly you know, you kind of know who's going to be in the lead. And the Charlotte Ultra Marathon down that's held in early February is a good example of this. You always see who's ahead of you. And I talked about this when I did the race report there. There are always these guys that lead the race that, for whatever reason, don't say a single word to when they pass you. And I don't understand that. They don't even acknowledge your presence. When the first three people pass me, you know, going the opposite direction, because they'd already gone around to the turnaround, which I wasn't even there yet. The first three runners that passed me, I was in a part of the trail where it was kind of single track for running. If you stepped off the trail, you were stepping into high grass. So I give the trail to the leaders. I just figure that's the courteous thing to do. They're the ones that are racing. I'm out there for recreation. I'm racing against the clock. I'm racing against myself. You know, personal growth, personal experience, blah, blah, blah. That's what I'm out there for. I'm not out there to win the race. I'm out there to kind of win in my heart, you know. So I step off the trail. I yield the trail to the people who are out there who are not a pretender. They're contenders. I'm a pretender. And none of them said a single word to me. And, you know, that's kind of messed up. You know, I stepped off the trail. I give them the trail because I don't have to do that. I don't have to step off the trail. You know, they're the ones that want to get somewhere as fast as possible, right? Well, they're going to go any route necessary. So I step off the trail and I yield to the trail. Well, and I just, you know, after each one passed by, they don't even say a word. And I just kind of, you know, I'm just shaking my head thinking, you know, it's typical of some of these fast ultra runners. I don't know, you know, where they don't have manners or something. And I think a simple thank you is really, I guess, all that would be needed. Well, the guy in fourth place, he actually yielded the trail to me. And there's my dryer. It's my clothes are ready to be folded. I thought that was a lot of class. And I think what I'm going to do, if I can find this guy's name, I'm going to try to, let's see. I don't know if I'll be able to figure out what his name was, because It's very possible. It's Vincent Ma. I don't know. I wish I knew his name because they only have the men overall. They only have the top three, but as for the guy that's in fourth place, I think he actually ended up in fifth place from what I heard later. I don't know what his name was, and I would describe him, but I don't want to do a stereotype. So. Because it might kind of, because I don't know the person's name, I don't want to describe what he looks like because, I could obviously have his ethnicity wrong and I don't want to do that. So, anyway, but I thought it was really cool that he yielded the trail to me. And I don't know, I thought that was cool because there was a section there where, only one person could really pass. I don't understand why people do that. I really don't. And if you watch the video of the race, you'll see how some of these younger ultra runners, they come out there to these races like dressed for battle. They have all skin tight spandex on, everything. They have the vest, with like it's like armor. It looks like armor that they're wearing, and I guess in some ways when you run an ultra marathon, it is like going to battle. I just thought it was really interesting. I guess I wasn't quite ready for. I've never done a race up there. Maybe they had a lot of military guys coming down for it because there was definitely some dudes there that looked like they were in excellent physical shape and they probably were military. And I guess in their head, some ways they are going to battle. So it was a different. You ought to watch the video. I'll link to it at Ashland Dave at Podbean, ashlanddave.podbean.com, and you'll see the way the rail it started out, at least the trail. Wanted to thank Neil Richard. He was there, and I got to meet him in person for the first time. He's listening to the podcast. I knew he was there when I saw his license plate, which is the same thing as his blog, which I want to call your attention to in case you want to check it out. He's pretty funny. It's called The Lumberjack. It's tk421.blogspot.com, and what he does, and I'm going to link to that at ashlanddave.podbean.com. At the beginning of his blog page, it says, "I'm a lumberjack and I'm okay, but be warned, I drink like a horse, sweat like a pig, spit like a camel, and swear like a sailor." And he's got he does a podcast. So if you're interested in something that's a little unique, definitely check that out, and I'll link to that in the show notes at ashlanddave.podbean.com. So I got a chance to talk to Neil and introduced myself to him and my two friends, John and John, and we chit-chatted for a little bit. About the event, and that's when he told me about the. I think he was wearing a half marathon. He was wearing a shirt that was the Dahlgren Heritage Trail half marathon, and he told me that's a pretty good event too, with probably double the amount of people. So I think that's something I might check out. And of course, it's always cool to meet somebody that you meet through the podcast, and that's happened several times now. And all these people that I've met have been really neat. So it's good to know somebody up in the King George area. And Neil, I'm sure we'll probably end up seeing each other again somewhere down the line. John King had an excellent finishing time. He finished at, I think it was 6:04, 6:05, something like that. Excellent. He's in much better shape than I am. When I was watching the video of this race, which I'll link to in the show notes if you want to check it out, that's when I was just looking at myself running, and I was thinking to myself, man, I gotta lose some of that gut because it's carrying too much weight for these ultra marathons. And I'm guessing it's keeping my heart strong. I sure hope it's not making it worse. The food at the end was outstanding. Was awesome. They had hot dogs, hamburgers, chips, Twinkies, and Hostess cupcakes, which I've never seen at the finish of an ultra marathon. I guess now that Twinkies are being made again. But this was the best part about the food at the end of this race. Was right at the finish line, they had the water bottles ice cold, and they had a bin full of ice cold sodas. And I think I got a Mountain Dew, because I just needed to kind of fill myself up with that feeling. I did coat my stomach with something right away, because I was really hungry. And that was just probably one of the best things to have right at the end, right at the finish line. You didn't have to really walk for it. When you cross the finish line, they had water and soda if you wanted it right there. Not a cup of it, but you got to take your own can. And I went over and sat down. And then I started getting a little worried about my chafing problem, and I'm going to just briefly touch on that because it's really just for men only. So if you're a female listening to the show, this is really, you might not understand this, but let's just say that I was a little worried about my feet being as wet as they were, because when I changed to dry socks at the halfway mark, and my feet were really getting were really wet in the shoes. And fortunately, though, the trail had very little climbing. There was one section where there was a detour to go around, I think, an outdoor firearms range. And you had to climb up a pretty steep hill. But the feet were getting really wrinkly, and I was worried that there might have been some blistering that was going to require a little care. As it turned out, it did not. However, the biggest problem I had was the loss of one of the nip guards and the chafing there, which was, fortunately, it was not a bleeder, which would have been a major rookie mistake. But the liner, let's just say, put it this way. I was wearing, I think, some 9-inch inseam Adidas running pants, which I like a lot. But it just so happens that this liner is a little bit looser, more loose than some of the other pants I have. And over the course, I don't think I've ever worn these shorts for an ultra. And let's just say over the course of 31 miles, that is not a good situation to have for a man. When I was running and walking with these two women, I had to put my hands in such a place on my own body to keep the chafing from being relieved, and it was a little embarrassing. I tried to be as discreet as I could, but I was hurting. And of course, the aftermath is really worse than the race, because even when there's some moisture, you still have some, you know, skin can lubricate, even though it's chafing. But if there's moisture there, you know, heat, moisture, and friction is what causes blistering. My skin was getting raw in my crotch, and it was going to be a situation where the shower was going to be torture, if not worse than torture. And, you know, no amount of powder or ointment or whatever, your skin just has to heal. And it took 2 days before I got to a point where I wasn't uncomfortable anymore. So a major note to self, Body Glide did not solve that problem, because that was applied liberally and often when I was able to. But it did not. Once the skin gets broken, it's there's going to be trouble. So, yeah, that was a major issue. So what I've done now is I've talked with my good friend Ashlyn Bob, because he wears spandex under his shorts, and I finally just, because I never really liked that. I just didn't understand it. He says that what he does is he gets the spandex and then cuts out the lining to the shorts, and then he has no friction. So I think I'm going to have to experiment with that. I'm going to have to maybe make a purchase and try it and see what happens, because that situation can't be replicated again. And I'm not even so sure if the liner... if the liner of the shorts was tighter, if that would have helped or not, because it was just so, everything was just so, so wet from humidity that day on race day. So anyway, I'll leave it at that. I don't want to get into too much more detail, because I don't want people to have these mental images that are going to make them vomit or anything. So what did I get for finishing? Well, I got a choice. I had a choice of three things. I could pick a hat that had the Dahlgren Heritage Trail logo on it. I could pick a pint glass with the logo on it, or I could pick looked like it was a highball glass with some type similar logo on it. Well, of course, my eyes went straight to the pint glass, because I knew that would get use. If not just sitting on my shelf in the garage, you know, the me wall with all my my stuff and the things I've accomplished, that you know, my ego wall, I guess. I could definitely use it to drink beer, and so we didn't drink beer out of it that right away, but we did stop at a convenience store on the way home, and I had a couple beers on the way home. So, you know, the course itself was awesome. Course support was awesome. There's nothing better than going up out of town to a race and knowing somebody that's there. So I knew Neil. I met a couple other people. I finished. I can't really describe how I did, but I actually had a faster finishing time than when I ran my first 50K, where I was trained and I was doing 20-plus mile training runs to prepare for the first 50K. And that was back in, I think it was 2008, if I'm not mistaken. Of course, that was that temperature of that was -2 degrees Fahrenheit at the start, and it didn't really warm up much more than that. But the cool thing about it was John King was there as a spectator for my first 50K, and here for my 25th marathon, he ran the he was in the same race. So overall, a great time and a great event. That's the Dahlgren Heritage Trail 50K. If you like running in the heat and humidity and training before, you know, in that kind of conditions, you can do that through the summer, and then that's usually the looks like the first Saturday in August is when that race is going to be. They also have a half marathon in late February. So that's the race report. I'm going to do the email bag section of the show in a separate podcast, which I will do shortly. And the reason for that is because I have a lot of emails. So I'm going to do the email bag section of the show in a separate podcast. This is Ashland Dave. I'm running in the center of the universe, Ashland, Virginia, reminding you to run to the finish. Keep on running, and don't forget to hug your kids. Y'all have a good week.